The expressed views, statements, and opinions by the guests on the Risk Advisor program made either during the show or on the corresponding social media and blog outlets are not necessarily the view or opinions of Baxter Productions, Inc. or any of its affiliates, associates, or others who are part of this production. Information provided during this broadcast is for news purposes only and does not constitute a remedy for any of the discussed risks presented.
Do you ever wonder what are the risks regarding that plastic surgery operation you've been contemplating? You can minimize the risk if you do your homework and make smart decisions. What you should consider before, during, and after. That's today's topic on theriskadvisor.com.
The Risk Advisor. You're listening to the Risk Advisor Podcast.
The Risk Advisor highlights topics about the most important personal security and safety issues today. This is for you, your family, and your loved ones. Experts alert to trends, tactics, and techniques used against us. You can be more aware and more informed to stay safe in this ever-changing, complicated place we call life. And now your host, media's go-to guy, Sal Lefrieri.
Welcome to the RiskAdvisor.com podcast. Today we are here with Dr. Maria Lotempio, who is a double board certified surgeon in plastic and reconstructive surgery and head and neck surgery. She was born in Buffalo, New York, started her medical career by first entering the field of nursing, working as a neonatal intensive care nurse. Later on, she realizes her goal to become a surgeon, and early on graduated from the State University of New York at Buffalo School of Medicine. She was accepted to the prestigious UCLA Head and Neck Residency Program, working exclusively in cosmetic and reconstructive procedures. Doctor, thank you for coming.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Nice to have you. So, we had you once before. We were talking about plastic surgery and the difference between, you know, cosmetic doctors and plastic surgeons, and we kind of went over that a little bit. But what I want to talk about today is sort of a follow-up on that, and that is a botched surgery.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Now, I get most doctors will never tell you they did a botched surgery, and we're not asking you about any botched surgery. That's not a point. But botch could mean so many different things to so many different people. I can come in, as I'm understanding this, and I can ask for a nose job, and I'm going to ask you for something, and you're going to do it, and then you think, as the surgeon, that it's a great job, and it came out really good, and I look at it and go, it's not exactly what I wanted. How do you, as the surgeon, deal with somebody that can become problematic or think that it's botched? How do you define botched?
So Botch is a difficult terminology to define, because botch in our world is negligence, is a plastic surgeon who clearly did not follow the principles of plastic surgery and left that individual scarred and functionally does not fit what they were supposed to do. I don't like that word. I think a better word is unrealistic expectations on the patient, that they feel that their surgery outcomes are not what they expected. If you take a bunch of patients and you put them in a room and you talk to several plastic surgeons that are board certified, 9 times out of 10, the community standard, the standard of a result, it has affected all those people. The standard is there. That individual may not see that as a standard, may say, hey, look, this is exactly not what I asked for, and may say it's botched. But from a plastic surgeon's point of view, it's an acceptable standard in the community.
So when a patient comes in, obviously of all of the things that you go through, clearing them medically and all of that, you really have to, it seems to me, it's almost more important that you establish their expectations and that they know that there's a range, that it's not something that's crystal clear. You're not giving change of a dollar and coming up with four quarters. There's
right.
A range.
There is, and there's variability. variabilities to everything we do. There's, I cannot promise 100% in any patient. No doctor can. Based on my experience, and I can give you a percentage of certain things that may or may not happen based on my own hands. I think that, let's take the nose, for example, because that's probably one of the hardest procedures we perform as plastic surgeons, because the nose can take up to a year to heal. And a month or 2 months after surgery, the nose may look wonderful. And then at month three, the patient comes back and it's a completely different nose because of the healing process. And unless the patient is educated beforehand, and you as a plastic surgeon saying to them, hey, look, you might have 8 weeks of perfect healing. And then after that, things can go wrong because you're still healing for that year. So when the patient hears that, and if they fall into the statistics, which is low, but if they fall into it, they come back at 3 months and they say, hey, look, you know what? You mentioned that to me. You told me that was a possibility, and they're okay. If you don't bring up certain things to patients and then they experience it, then they come and say, hey, look, you never explained that to me. You never told me this was a possibility. And they have a lot of anger issues. They're unsettled.
Well, I guess part of it, too, is that the doctor is selling a service.
Yes.
And you want to close the deal.
Absolutely.
And so you don't want to go through a whole laundry list of, hey, this is the bad things that may occur.
Right.
Right. So you can understand why they want to minimize that a little bit. But at the same point, obviously, if you're setting expectations, if you do it up front, it would just seem to make a lot more sense and things would become a lot simpler downrange.
Yeah. I mean, in reality, I can scare every single patient so they never have surgery in their life. I have the ability to do that, knowing all the complications. But because I know that a lot of those problems are very rare. So when patients do say, well, what are the complications? And I said that you may experience, I'll tell them the big ones that may affect them. So that if they see it or they experience it, it's not foreign to them.
In general, we're kind of contemplating, or we're talking about dealing with adults. What about children? Mm-hmm. You know, at what age is it become appropriate? And again, we're talking about elective surgery. We're not talking about something that's taking care of, you know, a disability or a medical necessity. We're talking about something that's purely, you know, purely cosmetic. What age should that be allowed? Because to deal with those issues, how do you deal with them?
Right.
How do you set expectations for a teenager?
It's hard. Teenagers are hard. Just in general. you know, it is common for teenagers to have what we call the sweet 16 nose job. The nose is usually fully developed by then, and it's okay to have surgery on structures that are fully developed. But the problem with plastic surgery is generally there are structures that are still growing and still changing in that individual. A perfect example is breast augmentation. Here, we usually, the moratorium is 22 years old because by then the breast is fully developed. And to make them larger is fine. But if you do it at a younger age, you can be interfering with the growth of the breast, the functionality of the breast, which is breastfeeding for those women who want to do that in the future. Other types of procedures, such as liposuction and Brazilian butt lifts and things like that, where teenagers are experiencing more types of surgeries like that, you know, it's an ethical issue. We're generally taught and trained that we don't perform plastic surgery on those individuals because they don't necessarily have the life experience or the cognitive development to understand the process and to understand what the outcomes may or may not be, if it's positive or negative. So we like to wait until they're a little bit older, so cognitively, 21 or 22, they understand that.
When we come back, we're going to talk about the risks associated with medical tourism. We'll be right back.
Sir, the chairman of the board is on the phone.
Let me ask you something. Workplace violence, terrorism, identity theft, cyberbullying, and stalking. It's not a matter of if they will happen, it's a matter of when. Are you prepared? Are you ready? Can you tell the board of directors you did all you could? The security world is too complicated to do it alone. You need a security advisor, someone you trust, to get straight answers, to tell you what you need to hear, not want to hear. Call Protective Countermeasures now. Protective Countermeasures has been providing security consulting to Fortune 500 companies for nearly 20 years. Make the call. The call is confidential. This is one secret you can keep. Call today. 914-576-8706. Or visit us at protectivecountermeasures.com.
You're watching the Risk Advisor Podcast, and we're with Dr. Maria Lotempio, a board-certified New York-based plastic surgeon specializing in reconstructive and cosmetic surgery. Let's talk about medical tourism, where people believe that they're going to go, they're going to get this great service, and they're going to do it at some fancy resort and turn it into a mini vacation. Let's talk about that for a bit.
Great. I love this subject. So really, the main reason people go outside of the country is cost. Okay. They don't want to pay the prices in the U.S., and they're willing to travel to get a bargain, to get a deal.
Now, is that because of malpractice, or is it multiples of things?
I think there's so many different variables that make that question unanswerable at this moment in time.
Okay.
But, you know, there's a lot of people that economically don't have the money, and these procedures are offered at this, you know, amazing discounted rates. And are like, great, I'm going to save a bunch of money. I'm going to go some warm climate. I'm going to have a great recovery. And I'm going to come home looking great, which often is not the case.
Why?
Well, the number one reason, and I think this is, again, more my opinion, is in the United States, and this is not an opinion, is we go through a very stringent learning and training program here to be accredited, to be American board certified in plastic surgery. We have to learn a lot. We have to perform, and we have to prove we're safe surgeons, we're knowledgeable. And I think that when you go outside the country, and some surgeons are extremely well qualified, but a lot of them are not the United States standards. They do not take the same exams. They don't go through the same training. And at the end of the day, that can cause a problem for the patient because more complications can be associated with those types of surgeon.
We'd have to think that the facilities themselves are not being held to the same standards. So not only do you have the problem of the doctor, but it sounds like you also have the problem with the facility itself.
You can. You can't. And the number one problems that we usually see are infections, and not just simple infections, really difficult, horrible infections that require long-term treatment and generally will negate any of the plastic surgery that they've received, meaning that if they had implants, the implants have to come out. If they've had fat deposited in certain areas, the fat has to be removed. So if they do come back with severe medical problems. Basically, everything in terms of the cosmetic result is done. It's gone. But not everyone. There are some very good centers. There are some very good plastic surgeons and patients that don't have any problems.
But just in general, though, I mean, even if you're doing surgery within the United States, you still run that risk of those complications could set in.
True.
But if you're dealing with a doctor in a foreign country.
Right. There's no follow-up. There's no doctor-patient relationship. You're thousands of miles away. Who's going to take care of you? They're done with you. You paid them your money. They did the procedure. In their mind, they're done. They did what they were supposed to do. Now you come back to the United States and you're sick. Now what? Patient feels abandoned, feels neglected. Where are they going to go? A lot of them sit on their infections longer, sit on their problems longer because they don't know what to do.
And ultimately, what winds up happening with them? Do they wind up just reaching out to the general practitioner and say, hey,
yep,
I got a problem?
Yeah, they can. Then they usually wait too long, and then they end up in the emergency room, and that's where we see these patients.
Because you would have to think that if there was any I was going to say significance, but if there's any intricacies of the surgery, going to your general doctor, he can see the infection, and he can see something's wrong. Mm-hmm. But it's got to be, at some points, it's got to be, becomes life-threatening.
It can, yes.
Because of the infection, because of the problems that you're running into, because of that the medical team that you're now talking to doesn't understand the intricacies of what you went through.
Yes.
So you wind up in an emergency room. How does that affect you? And I don't mean that you as a doctor, you're not happy that these things occur, but how much more difficult does it make for you to go in? Because now you have to deal with the infection, deal with the problems, deal with everything that the complications that have developed, and then probably go back to square one. Now you're kind of stuck because medically there's a medical necessity of what you got to do.
Right.
Right. You know what's right to do.
Right.
Right. But who's going to pay?
Right.
Well, there's two. So the board certified surgeon has gone through all this training that can easily treat this patient because of their past knowledge. Easily, in a sense, they know what to do that is correct to save that person's life, to do everything above board. The cosmetic surgeon doesn't have that experience. Cosmetic surgeon did a one-year training program, didn't understand the complexities and complications because in a 12-month period, they might not have seen it. Plastic surgeon that's board certified, that's been out for 10, 20 years, we've seen a lot. We know a lot. You know, we've gone through an accredited training program. I've done 9 years of residency. I've seen a lot, so I feel comfortable. We go in there, we do the best we can as surgeons and take care of the patient. That's our main goal. Cost is a separate issue. We don't deal with the cost at that point. If I'm on call and I go in, it's going to end up costing that patient a lot more than they've ever expected to pay.
And for those that are not capable of paying, creates this real quandary, right? Because there are things that you know can be done, should be done, you know, what to be done, but turns out that it's, you just don't have the time, or the patient doesn't have the finances for it. And that's got to be a very difficult line for the doctors in the United States that wind up getting these patients. Of course, you see what happened, and it's got to really pull at the heartstrings.
It does, but we do everything we can for that patient, and we don't, at that point, cost is not in our mind. We're not saying, I'm not going to treat this patient because I'm not going to get paid. We took an oath. Our oath is to take care of the patient. Our oath is to get the patient through difficult situations. Granted, this wasn't my patient. Granted, this patient decided to go outside of their neighborhood, where here in New York City, we have excellent plastic surgeons that are board certified and super trained. But this individual felt that they can do and go somewhere, and it would benefit from them. You cut corners, there's going to be problems in any industry. I have a person, a family member, that always says laughingly, jokingly to me, is you pay for what you get. And I always find that funny. But in some reality, you pay for what you get.
Yeah, that's true. Okay, when we come back, we're going to talk with Dr. Lotempio just about what a medical license gets you in the United States these days and what you can do with it. We'll be right back.
From the files of New York detective Frank Santasola comes a riveting murder mystery novel, The Garbage Murders. After an illicit liaison with his mistress, the owner of a private sanitation company in New York is murdered. His wife, aware of the affair, first believes it could be the motivation for the killing. But when her truck drivers are attacked by her husband's associates, family values get questioned. Enter the life of Detective Frank Miranda, one of a few men in law enforcement assigned to infiltrate the Italian mob and bring to justice some of the biggest names in organized crime history. Be taken into the world of an infiltrator and the personal decisions and sacrifices he made daily. Guaranteed to touch all your emotions, sadness, anger, love, and laughter. Available on Amazon Books in both paperback and Kindle editions.
TheGarbageMurders.com.
You're watching the Risk Advisor Vodcast, and we're back with Dr. Maria Lotempio, a board-certified New York-based plastic surgeon specializing in reconstructive and cosmetic surgery. Okay, so we talked a little bit before about, you know, doctors and dealing with people that are going out of the country and doing all of that sort of good stuff. Talk to me about, what do you have to go through to become a doctor?
A lot.
So, in the United States, and we're just going to talk about how doctors are trained here, since that's what I know. 4 years of college, okay, a degree, and it could be any degree. Once they're accepted into medical school is 4 years. During their medical school training, they're exposed to all types of medicine, and usually during your third and fourth year, you make a determination of the area of medicine that you're most interested in. And when I say medicine, I also include surgery. So you apply for a surgical residency or a medical residency, which are very different, and we're going to talk about the medical residency. So those people will end up in a medical residency in the United States. Most of them are 3 years.
On top of the 4 years of medical school.
Correct.
Right, so now you're up to seven.
Right.
Okay.
And then if they want to specialize, heart, kidneys, different parts of the body, neurology, then they have to do a fellowship. Okay. And depending on what they want, then that's additional training. In surgery, they'll apply to a surgical fellowship. There are several, a surgical residency, excuse me, there are several. General surgeries in the United States is 5 years. There's orthopedic surgery, there's head and neck surgery, there's urology, and there's plastic surgery. Neurosurgery, there's a bunch of them. And those residencies can be anywhere from 5 years to 6 years, depending on what path and what program and is there research.
So basically, you become a professional student.
Oh, by far.
Yeah, it's
okay.
And then after you finish those particular residencies, you have an option of doing a second residency or continuing on and do a higher level of training, which is often called a fellowship. So let's take me, for example. I did 6 years of head and neck, 2 years of plastic surgery, and then a microsurgical fellowship in breast reconstruction, and then a lymphedema fellowship. So my total experience as a resident was almost 9 years.
On top of the 4 years of
medical school and the 4 years of college. So depending on...
So you're in school pretty much more than almost as much as a person who has a 20-year career.
Pretty much.
Okay.
Yep. Just, so, you know, we come out...
Just tracking.
We come out in our 30s and where people have been in the work field for past 10 years and we're coming out kind of wet behind the ears, so to speak.
Wow. So you get all of this training. You get licensed. What does that license allow you to do?
So let's talk about medical license. Everyone in the United States has to have a medical license. The medical license is 3 examinations that gives you a license to practice medicine. 2 of those exams are done during your medical school years, and the last exam is during your first year of residency. It doesn't matter what kind of residency you do. It could be medicine or it could be surgery. At the end of that year, when you take that exam and you pass, you are granted a medical license. By the definition of the medical license, you are safe to practice the field of medicine and surgery.
Wow.
So what does that mean? So generally, a medical license, by the way it's written, says I could be a heart surgeon after 1 year of training. I could be a brain surgeon. I could be a cardiologist. I could do anything I want because I have a medical license and I've gone through the training. I'm not board certified. And that's very different than medical licensure. So we see very often our people in the field, especially plastic surgery, that have never completed a residency program. They have never been eligible to be board certified because they've never completed the criteria. They may be an OBGYN and they could be board certified in OB, or they could be board certified pediatrician. But any of those individuals or internist can go and technically perform plastic surgery under the laws that are written.
Basically, not just plastic surgery, any surgery.
Correct.
Right? They
can. I could go and do OBGYN.
All right, so that's got to open up all kinds of problems.
Yes and no. So this is how here we try to, there's not more problems than you think. Because just by that statement, you're probably saying, oh my gosh, that's impossible. Well, you can't be in a hospital. You can't be on staff at a hospital unless you're board certified in your specialty. Hospitals give you 5 years to become board certified. If you do not fulfill the criteria by which you're physically operating, you cannot operate or be associated with a hospital. You can operate in a private surgery center. That's different. You can operate in a surgery office. That's different. So those are where we're starting to see some problems now in the United States, is people who claim that they're plastic surgeons, and anyone can say they're a plastic surgeon. And then they set up shop and they start operating. As long as nothing goes wrong and there's no complications, they're fine. The problem is if there's complications. Problem is if there's negligence involved, then they can be sued and their license can be taken away.
Would medical malpractice, I would assume that they're not carrying malpractice insurance, because I can't believe that an insurance company would actually insure them.
Right. There's ways around everything. They can be insured for certain procedures, and they can be insured for certain things. But, you know, that's more of a question for the insurance companies that rather than me, because, you know, I only know that I'm insured for my specialty.
Wow. And obviously the little pop-up shops is really problematic.
Well, right. So we're seeing more and more in the media, you know, the Bronx woman that was doing butt injections. We're seeing people, doctors in Miami. There is an OB in New York City that doesn't have a license, that was doing surgeries and had 19 patients that sued them and because of complications. And there was, I believe in the Post, they said that they called the office the next day after the story broke, and that particular doctor was still taking patients.
Wow. That's incredible.
However, though, there is a movement to really kind of pare down these pseudo-doctors, so to speak. So in December, California has now come out, which the American Society of Plastic Surgery, against the cosmetic surgeons, which are very different surgeons. They were advertising that they were board-certified surgeons, and they are not. So the American Society of Plastic Surgery took the cosmetic board patients, their industry, that whole organization, to court, and American Plastic Surgery won. Those are not board-certified surgeons. You cannot advertise that you are a board-certified plastic surgeon.
Hmm. Wow.
So maybe that will start catching on to the other states.
Well, it's amazing when you're thinking about what people have to go through for surgeries and the risk that they're going to take, and to understand the little nuances and the difficulties with it.
You know, patients don't think they're going to, you know, they don't think that sometimes plastic surgery is real surgery.
It's like buying consumer goods.
That's
okay.
It.
Okay, we're out of time. Once again, we'd like to thank you for joining us. How do patients get in touch with you?
Great. So any of the patients can look it up on the internet, Lotempio Plastic Surgery for Women, or lotempioplasticsurgery.com. They can call my office, 212-427-2020.
That's great. Thanks again. Thanks again to our special guest, Dr. Maria Lotempio. We'd like to remind you, if you have a question or a comment, please write us at questions@theriskadvisor.com or follow us on social media accounts that you can find at theriskadvisor.com. Remember, you can watch the show on iTunes, iHeartRadio, all of the social media sites that we have, and you can all find them from our website. With that, we'd like to thank you for watching and hope to see you next week.
We hope you enjoyed this show. If you have any questions, would like to appear on the program, or recommend a guest, contact us at theriskadvisor.com. Follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and LinkedIn. View and listen to us on iTunes, iHeartRadio, YouTube, and Roku TV. Tune in live on various local radio stations. Find links to all of these and listen to past shows at theriskadvisor.com. Thank you for listening, stay safe, and join us again next week for another episode of The Risk Advisor. Protective Countermeasures has been providing security consulting to Fortune 500 companies for nearly 20 years. Call today, 914-576-8706. ProtectiveCountermeasures.com.
The Risk Advisor.